We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. And today, really happy to be joined by my good friend, Mike Kay. He just joined the Panthers beat for the Charlotte Observer. Mike, what's going on, man?
Nothing. How are you? It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too, man. I'm really glad our paths finally intersected. We've been kind of communicating on Twitter for a while on all sorts of things, whether it's the NFL draft or just NFL moves in general. But what's been your background? How did you get to like the Panthers beat? Because you've been in several different outlets. What's kind of been your process as far as how you've landed with the Panthers beat?
So I graduated from college in 2011 and started out in broadcasting. But while I was doing that, I was also writing a lot of NFL stuff, mostly draft stuff for SB Nation. And then I went out to Arizona and covered ASU a little bit, covered the Eagles for the NFL blog, covered the entire NFL for SB Nation on their news desk. And then eventually I got hired to be a full-time beat writer covering the Jacksonville Jaguars for a TV station in Jacksonville. Did that for roughly 3.5 years, then moved to Philly to cover the Eagles following their Super Bowl run, covered them for 4 seasons. This offseason, just to give myself a little bit of flexibility and a new challenge, I went to Pro Football Network where I was their lead NFL writer. I did that throughout the offseason. It was an amazing offseason, but I found myself as I was on my pro day tour, where I went to, I believe it was 6 or 7 different teams, I found myself yearning to be back on a beat. And, obviously I had been on 2 previous beats. There were a select few cities that I was willing to go to. The Charlotte Observer reached out, like kind of out of nowhere, one of those, everything happens for a reason sort of things. And, my wife and I couldn't wait to move to Charlotte. We love this area. I went to sleepaway camp in Hendersonville when I was a kid. Since we've been here, it's just been an incredible experience. And the Charlotte Observer, obviously a legacy paper. I've worked for notable papers before, the Newark Star Ledger, which is also NJ.com. That's what I covered the Eagles for. And I wanted a different challenge. And there's something about local beat writing that I really love. I love connecting with fans. I love breaking news, but I more so like telling stories. That's why I got in the industry. And there's no shortage of stories for the Panthers since I've been on this beat, unfortunately. Fortunately or unfortunately, I knew the situation that I was getting myself into. A lot of people were surprised when I left the Eagles beat in general, because a lot of us assumed that they would be very good. I don't know about as great as they've been, but no, it's been very interesting to go from Jacksonville to Philly to here. But I'm optimistic about the future in a lot of ways because I think there is a decent core here on defense. And it's kind of like a blank palette on offense. It's kind of like, you know, if you really like rebuilding teams in Madden, you typically try to find a team where, at least I do, where the offensive line's built, but everything else is kind of dormant. Like the quarterback situation's bad. The running back situation's bad. The wide receiver situation is bad. The tight end situation is bad. And that's kind of what this team was on paper to me. And I'm really intrigued by their future.
Yeah, and let's just dive right into it. I mean, this franchise, in some ways, it's like you said, it has a good kind of starting point with the defensive core. And I also think the offensive line, you know, has been a strength. A lot of people, you know, especially within the national arena, I think they kind of underrated their offensive line moves over the offseason.
I agree.
And I just think, like, the guys that they brought in, like Corbett and Bozeman and even drafting Ekwonu, which myself, I was a big fan of that pick, but I thought it would be a little rougher transition for him, but he's really picked it up. So for me, I definitely think that there is a relatively stable core. Now we can get into, you know, what we think about the future here, but just first off, what has been your impression of, like, the offense before we get to the other parts of the team, quarterback aside?
So I think you and I have kind of talked about this offline or online, I guess, but off, you know, off record here. But, like, to me, Ben McAdoo wants a pocket passer. He wants 11 personnel, but he wants the F or the Y to block. He wants to hit outside the numbers. He's dealing with two very short quarterbacks in PJ Walker and Baker Mayfield. Typically when that happens, the middle of the field is somewhat avoided, especially when you're running the type of offense that Ben is doing. You know, Ian Thomas is blocking on first and second down. Tremble's running routes on third down, but he's not going to be targeted as, you know, he's not Greg Olsen, right? And so I think it's an interesting situation because it seems like that Deontay Foreman fits his offense more than Christian McCaffrey did. And I think, like, you know, the Ewing theory, when you take away a team's best player, the other players gradually step up and find their roles. And I think Christian McCaffrey was really the Patrick Ewing of this team in that, you know, in order for the offense to work even relatively well, you had to give this guy 25 touches. But realistically, a successful offense, especially one like Ben McAdoo's, which is not very elaborate, but also makes sense on an old school level, I don't think he fit very well. That's why, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about the trade while we're on here, but that's why I kind of like what I'm seeing with Bozeman, who is at center, very smart guy, very gritty. He fits what Steve Wilks kind of preaches, which is be relentless and play without fear. I think the same thing can be said about Deontay Foreman. You're seeing Terrace Marshall kind of play with size a little bit now. You're seeing, you know, guys like, you know, Icky, you brought up him. The first few games were kind of like a work in progress, but I think since Steve Wilks has taken over and they've kind of opened up the passing game to a kind of more deliberate approach, I think he's played exponentially well. And I think, you know, you bring up Corbett, I think he is the best signing of the offseason, really, because he has stabilized this offensive line. Like, compared to last year, like, it's very interesting when you talk to other beat writers or other media people in Carolina, they constantly talk about how the offensive line had no depth and no real talent at guard the last few years. And I think Christensen and Corbett have really solidified those two positions. If you look at this roster and you're, or just the offense, right, and you're a potential coaching search candidate, Yeah, you don't have a quarterback. Yeah, you don't really have any tight ends. But you have DJ Moore and you have a really, really well-built offensive line if you bring back Bozeman.
Yeah, I agree. And I just to stick to a couple of players you mentioned there, what is it, do you think, that guys like Terrace Marshall and even Tommy Tremble, he had the touchdown against Tampa. They're both second-year guys. They were drafted in the same class. And a lot of people I can speak for, they were excited by that draft class. It included also J.C. Horn and quite a few players. Christensen was also part of that class. Do you think it's just a coincidence that, you know, it's a coaching change and the trade kind of opened things up for them? And I've been saying this for years, and it's no disrespect to McCaffrey. I just feel like their offense was way too reliant on him, and I think they played to a detriment, in fact.
Yeah, let me take that for the second part of that second part of that statement first, because, you know, I grew up an Eagles fan. I've obviously covered the Eagles, but I thought it was a lot like Brian Westbrook, where his strengths almost made it so that nobody else could develop. And like, outside of the Terrell Owens year, really with Rhett Westbrook for about 6 years, he was the entire offense outside of McNabb. And I think you saw that a little bit with Carolina once, you know, Cam kind of post Cam MVP Super Bowl year. I think you kind of saw that Christian McCaffrey became not only the straw, but the cup and the liquid of the drink. You know what I mean? He was everything. And I think that was detrimental to DJ Moore. I know he put up some decent numbers with some pretty horrendous quarterbacking, but he's a guy who I think is a top 8 to 10 wide receiver in the league. He's got a great mindset. He's got really good hands. Technique's good. And then you see like guy, you bring up Tremble. I wasn't a huge fan of his in college as a prospect. I think he's kind of been what he was. But I also think when you look at the way that Tremble's kind of been able to step up in a little way, it's because he's getting more reps. He's getting more targets. It's he's part of the offense as opposed to just being like an ornament, really, right. He was basically, at least the first 2 weeks that I was here, was basically like a two-way decoy, but in a way that he would block and then run routes, but he wouldn't really be part of the play. He'd be like the fifth read. I think Terrace Marshall, it's laughable that guy was inactive for a few games, like utterly laughable. And I think we saw in Atlanta, this guy's really good at beating zone coverage in particular. I don't think he's a man-on-man winner. I don't think he naturally plays with size. He's not a T. Higgins. But I think he's a guy that you can use in a way where he can be a possession receiver when DJ Moore can't be. I think he's a guy that complements DJ Moore really well. The issue for them is they don't really have a burner on the outside or in the slot. And so his talent kind of gets negated in a lot of ways because he's got pretty good speed, not great speed. He's got pretty good size, but he doesn't really necessarily play up to his size. So they need somebody who can kind of fill that third wide receiver role and maybe get him open with some one-on-one matchups, find some creativity to get him open. I thought he played extremely well against Atlanta. I know they want to constantly go to that fade, but that's not him at the NFL level, in my opinion. I think he's more of I just don't think he plays to his size.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, if you go back to his college tape, he was primarily operating in a slot, and he was there that 2021 season. The 2020, the COVID year, when the year after they won a national championship, and that's when he really put up numbers. But, speaking of which, I mean, again, we'll get to quarterback in a second, but you know, this franchise, they are equipped now with much stronger assets moving forward. Sure. I thought they were very depleted in this upcoming draft, which is why I felt they had to really recoup some of that by trading some players away. And so as we look forward to that, I want to, turn this into an off-season discussion, but looking at this roster now, what position do you think that they can supplement on offense that can that should kind of be a priority, again, outside of quarterback?
Tight end, no question. You look at the TJ Hawkinson deal, and you're like, the Panthers probably could have gotten him for a cheaper price because he wasn't within division. I think when you have a guy who can block and catch in bulk, that's a huge asset to a quarterback. Now, I just brought up the fact that the Y and F players typically are avoided when you have a smaller quarterback, but also you're looking at a situation where you're probably going to have a young quarterback come in next year. They have to get a veteran. I don't know. I don't care if it's like Austin Hooper of all people. I think they need to bring in somebody who can be relied upon over the middle, who can be a big target, who is more than just a blocker, more than just a receiver. They need a two-way tight end. I think they need a speed threat at wide receiver. Let's pay a lot of attention to how Elijah Moore's situation ends with the Jets. I could see that being an issue towards the offseason. He's kind of exactly the player that they need. They need like an Eddie Royal, Elijah Moore style player who can spread the field, kind of allow Marshall to create underneath, let DJ Moore take some of the slant and goes. Like, they need a guy who can really stretch the field. And I think at running back, look, this, I don't know who's going to be in charge next year, but I think that this style of football, at least if Deontay Foreman's part of the rotation, it makes sense.
Yeah, I would keep him 100%. And I think Hubbard has also shown some improvements over the course of the year. And I wasn't a huge fan of his last year. Just I thought he did some things that were a little concerning. But I think he's improved. And when you compliment him to another back, I think he shows much more of his strengths, which are straight line speed, hitting the hole, and then using that speed to just outrun defenders. I think he's a really good job of it. It's funny because, before you joined the beat, there was discussion that a guy like Terrace Marshall could be cut. He was on the roster bubble, supposedly. Right. So it kind of all just works out that that didn't happen. I would have been really devastated if it did. But in addition to that, the quarterback position, this is, it's been all over the place for this franchise since unfortunately Cam Newton got hurt in 2019 or 2018 and then carried over. They had the Kyle Allen year in 2019 and then Teddy Bridgewater the year after, and then Darnold and Mayfield. I guess like it's definitely a position that I'm going to monitor, and I think everyone should be monitoring. They should be looking for an upgrade because we've seen these quarterbacks, like these backup types, have get hot for like 3 or 4 games, and then you don't know, they kind of fall back down to earth, whether it's Cooper Rush or Bailey Zappi. So I'm obviously really pleased at the way Walker has played. One, do you think it's sustainable? And two, what do you think he needs to do for the rest of the year to actually consider himself a viable option in the future?
Well, I think it's tough, right? Because we've seen, 3 games where his first game, it was hard to even call him a quarterback. His second game, he was fantastic. And then his third game, he was terrible in the first half and then battled like a pro and made one of the most difficult throws I think I've ever seen live in my life. I literally tweeted out, I've never seen anything like this. That Patrick Mahomes is right. That throw, to throw that ball the way he did. Now, I know he likes to push the ball downfield, but to throw the ball the way he did, 62 yards with the accuracy in the timing of the moment, just an unreal throw. So you're kind of like, what is he, right? Because you've been through so many extremes. You've seen LA and you saw the first half of Atlanta. Then you saw Tampa Bay and you saw the second half of Atlanta. And it's like, what is he? He's he's still an enigma. And I think he has to find like a happy median. Like it would be great in Cincinnati if, he threw for 2 touchdowns, 210 yards, and maybe an interception. And then you're like, okay, cool. Like, he can get the job done. He's a Gardner Minshew-esque player. you know, you probably don't want him to be your starter, but you know you can rely on him as a backup. Literally every player in that locker room battles for him. There are worse things to have, right? And at worst, he can maybe be a stopgap guy. Now, I know there's a lot of folks who are very anti-PJ and think his upside is limited, and he is a guy who went from practice squad arm to XFL standout to NFL backup to Steve Wilkes' starter over 6 years. It's just it's hard to kind of explain his trajectory, and so it's even harder to explain what his future holds. I don't think Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield are the answer, but you're playing in this thing where, like, Steve Wilkes is coaching to keep his dream job. The players all bought into him, and they want to fight and win for him. You know, there's a potential that you play yourself out of the top three quarterbacks in this class, whether you like Stroud or Young or Levis. And so I think it's a really interesting outlook for a team that a lot of people would say is missing a ton of pieces on offense, missing some pieces on defense, but they're still kind of competing. They're in every game pretty much.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, looking forward, the schedule is relatively tough. I think obviously this week you're facing a Bengals team without Ja'Marr Chase, and we saw how poor they did without him. But I think that them being at home and you know, giving them another week, it's still going to be a really tough game. And then short week against the Falcons, and then you go on the road to Baltimore, and then you have Denver. And again, I don't know what to make of them. They're all over the place, but it's still Russell Wilson. So, and then you go after the bye week, you go at Seattle, which looks like a very formidable opponent. So I don't know, like I can see them winning like 5 to 6 games. That still probably keeps you like in the top 10. But at the same time, it's tough to really know, because I don't think the Rams are a very good team, and they kind of really not dominated, but they kind of had their way in some respects. And it was just a pick six by Dante Jackson that really just kept them in the game. So no, you're right. And I think that quarterback has to be the priority. And I think it has to be the priority through the draft. And that's why I was happy that they did keep, that they did make the trades, because we'll see where they land draft wise, whether it's top five or, you know, 8 or 9. You know, a few members of this front office were in Buffalo when they drafted Josh Allen, so they have experience with, you know, trading up, and maybe that has to be the course of action that they go for. But yeah, and as we look forward to that, like, let's just try to stick on some of these players who didn't get traded. And we had this conversation this week on Twitter, and the big name is Brian Burns. I would have been fine trading him if it was for a 2023 first round pick and potentially more. I think the 24 and 25 first round pick offer that came from the Rams, I think it just wasn't acceptable, because you're looking, I think when you're trading players, especially with a GM that I don't know what his job status is, and I think he's a pretty good one. I have no issue with Scott Fitter. But at the same time, I think that they want to deal with like the present value cost as opposed to what the future value is going to hold. And I think that if this was like a different GM, they probably could have taken that offer. But I think I'm fine keeping him. And I'm curious to hear what your perspective is on that.
I think with Brian Burns, it's a situation where, like, A, you want to be appealing to the next guy. B, he's probably, like, from a 24-year-old pass rusher standpoint, he's exactly what you want in pretty much every category outside of maybe run stopping. He's an excellent leader for his age. He's well-liked in the locker room. He's pretty consistent for the most part. And I think he knows what he doesn't know. And I think that that's very rare for a player his age. And I think he's an ascending player. So to trade a guy like that for, not to be rude to the NFL draft system, but for, you know, a can of magic beans is kind of, especially in 2024 and 2025, when you're not even done with that scouting that draft yet, it's not really good business. And I think, you know, for Scott Fitterer, who while I think he has done a very good job of at least this offseason with stocking talent outside of the quarterback position, there are split opinions on Scott around the league. And I think he really needs to show that he can build a sustainable, successful team. And he has yet to do that. It's kind of unfair to judge him after 2 years, but trading away Burns, you have to replace him. And I think I agree with you. If they would have gotten a 2023-1 and a 2024-2 for him, I would have said, okay, that makes sense. But to trade Burns, who right now is their best player or most valuable player, for picks that they can't even use for this upcoming offseason would be absolutely asinine. And I would kill him for it. I mean, I really would. I think Scott did the absolute right move. The right non-move, I should say.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that same question also applies to Derek Brown. He has turned out to be a very excellent defensive tackle, in my opinion. And I actually think he's been the best player on defense this year. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but it's the same thing as far as I'm glad they didn't trade him, because, again, he has 2 years of control off any of the fifth-year option. Let's just hope he can find some consistency. He's obviously eligible for an extension this year. I don't know if that's something they're going to pursue. But it's the same thing that applies to him and Jeremy Chinn and J.C. Horn. And I've been a little critical of Horn this year just because I think the injuries are just a little annoying because he was the first defensive player drafted. He was drafted ahead of Surtain and Parsons. And I think one of those guys, in Parsons' case, is definitely like Hall of Fame bound. And Surtain is looking like the best corner in the NFL. So for me, I want to see him be able to stay healthy. And then Chinn, I think, is a pretty quality player too. So yeah, as you do look forward, like, they're going to have to make some tough decisions with their contracts and who to extend. And out of all those names, like, which ones do you think are players that they will have the foresight to give extensions to or potentially trade in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't turn down two first-round picks, no matter when they are, and not expect Brian Burns to really cash in. I mean, I think Bradley Chubb's extension with the Dolphins is very interesting. I think that Burns will surpass it. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of happens there. Yeah, Derek Brown, I would lock up immediately. There was a play versus Atlanta this weekend where it was a QB keeper. I couldn't tell if it was a run pass option or if it was just a play action run. But Derek Brown sniffed it out immediately and then got to a spot within like a millisecond. Like, his stride was insane. And to me, that's the sign of an ascending defensive tackle, not just from the read-react, but how to get there. He kind of reminds me of Fletcher Cox a little bit. Like, I'm seeing a lot of quick movement in small spaces, and he's able to attack and read. He's very smart, you can tell. And then I think when you talk to him in the locker room, just seems like a really sharp guy. When Eddie Pinheiro missed those two field goals, he was one of the few guys that really surrounded Eddie and supported Eddie before he spoke with the media, after he spoke with the media. He's a very good teammate, and he's a guy that I think can be a very big building block, like Chris Jenkins sort of guy for this franchise for years to come.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm glad he's playing well. I was a little down on the pick at the time of that draft because I just thought that I'm not sure what his pass rush upside was, but I think he's definitely shown it in both aspects, the run and the pass, to be a very quality defensive tackle. Transitioning now to just the expectations moving forward with Steve Wilks. And obviously this team has looked much improved. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But let's just try to, play this hypothetical. What do you think Steve Wilks has to do to, keep this job long-term? And the comparison I made was a couple years ago, the Falcons, they fired their head coach like Dan Quinn at the time, really early in the season. I think it was after five games as well. And Raheem Morris took over and did a really good job. I know they only finished with like four wins, but if you actually go back and look at some of their metrics, I'm pretty sure they finished with like a positive point differential because the few wins they had, they just blew teams out. And so I think it could be a very similar situation to that where the owner probably wants to hire someone else, but what does Wilkes have to do to really kind of change his mind?
Well, I've been asked this, I feel like 100 times, but my answer is always this. So when David Tepper said he fired Matt Rhule is because he felt like they weren't getting over the hump. And then he defined getting over the hump as winning more than the year before, making tangible growth while doing so, and looking like you're building a winning program and a winning culture. Then he said that Steve Wilkes needs to do an incredible job to be considered for the permanent job. Well, here's what I would say. Matt Rhule won five games in 16 attempts his first year. He won five games in 17 games the next year. And then he won one of five
yeah.
this year. So he was 11-28. And to me, what Steve Wilkes needs to do is tangibly prove that he can be more successful than Matt Rhule. And I think by winning six games on his own with a roster that a lot of people would agree has a ton of holes. They just traded away their quote unquote best player for picks. They lost another one of their starting wide receiver. They had one of their best defenders, Jeremy Chinn, has been out for several games. They lost JC Horn for a couple of games. I mean, the deck has really been stacked against Wilkes in a lot of ways. And you're seeing how hard this team is playing for Wilkes and trying to win for him. And I think if he can win six games, which I think is doable, I disagree with you. I don't think the rest of this schedule is that daunting. They play the NFC South teams three more times, and those teams are struggling. They play the Lions, who are in last place. They play the Broncos, who are struggling like they're an NFC South team. I think the only like defined loss where I'd be like, yeah, there's no way they win that game is Baltimore. But I mean, Cincinnati looked pretty bad last week against Cleveland, and Cleveland's kind of middling like the Panthers. And so I think, look, if they can, I've seen weirder stuff happen in the NFL, believe me. And I see the way this team plays for and respects Steve Wilkes. Like, the tone and vibe of the locker room is exponentially different than it was under Matt Rhule. Not that guys didn't respect or buy into Matt Rhule, but like, it feels like it's a business culture, but people are still having fun. Like, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's like, it felt like everybody was really enjoying their job from home under Matt Rhule. Now they're really at work.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I covered Matt Rhule for 2 weeks. So I want to be fair here, but I will say there is a different type of attitude, a different type of fun happening in the locker room. There's a different type of connection in the locker room. I think, you know, I was with Matt Rhule. I covered Matt Rhule for 2 weeks. So it's hard for me to like bash him completely, but it does kind of feel like there's an adult in the room now.
Yeah. And I think everyone would agree with that. There are some things that are still kind of, there are things that kind of irk me about Wilkes in some respects, as far as, you know, how he manages the game. There's some fourth down decisions. And then I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before where it was like a 36 yard line, took a delay game, then punted. At that point, you should probably kick a field goal. But again, hopefully those stuff can be improved over time. But I do agree that the schedule isn't as daunting as it probably once appeared. So, you know, fingers crossed in that respect. But let's just assume, you know, Wilkes doesn't necessarily get the job. Who are some guys that you think, you know, could fit this team from a head coaching position, whether it's, you know, a former coach or an offensive guy or defensive guy? Are there any like particular names that you've kind of just, you know, kept your eye on?
So the guy that I would hire is D'Amico Ryans. He's an exceptional leader. He's a great play caller, extremely creative. Guys love him. Now, from the buzz that I've heard, I do think Tepper will lean more offensive. And if that's the case, the three guys that he should really consider are Shane Waldron from Seattle, Shane Steichen from Philadelphia, and then Kellen Moore from Dallas. So I think those three young OCs, like, you have to kind of, this job isn't going to be the most appealing job. We don't know who else is going to be fired, but given the lack of quarterback stability, given the lack of playmaking weapons, and also given the fact that, you know, Tepper hasn't had a ton of success as an owner, I don't think that they're going to draw like a massive name. But I do think somebody like Shane Steichen really fits the mold of this franchise. He fits the temperament of the city. And I think he would do very well here. Waldron has had like impressive success with Geno Smith, who's going to be a free agent. If he comes here, who's to say he won't bring Geno Smith with him? I think, you know, Kellen Moore's a guy who's kind of had an up and down roller coaster ride as a play caller, but he's a guy who's a former NFL quarterback, which I think Tepper would appreciate. He understands how to relate to players. He's still extremely young, so you can grow with him and be patient. And I think he's a guy who's been around enough head coaches to understand how the job works. I know some people will throw out Ken Dorsey. I think he's only been an offensive coordinator for a minute, basically. Ben Johnson's another guy who's getting a lot of buzz, but again, he's been an offensive coordinator for a minute, and I think you probably need another year with him. You know, defensively, I mean, there aren't a lot of, like, incredible candidates. Jonathan Gannon from the Eagles has gotten a lot of buzz around the league. Is like kind of the defensive Sean McVay, a young mind who's creative and is very not necessarily stuck in his ways, but knows what he wants, and he relates very well to players. Obviously, the Eagles have stacked that defense, and he's benefited from it in a way that he didn't last year. You know, I don't know what the deal is with Aaron Glenn, but I'd imagine he will not be getting as much head coaching interest as he did last year, unfortunately. And, you know, I think Raheem Morris, another guy you brought up, is doing a great job in LA, but I do wonder what his prospects are long term.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you on those three offensive guys, though. Waldron, Steichen, and Kellen Moore. I think they would all, either of those three would be really good options. I would probably have Waldron at the top, just because I've been a fan of, you know, the Sean McVay system. And, you know, I mean, those guys are doing pretty well around the league, whether it's, you know, Kevin O'Connell this year, or Mike McDaniel, kind of similar tree, the Shanahan McVay tree. But yeah, I'm with you. It's going to depend sort of like where they fall in the draft too, I think, because if you have like a top five or top six pick, then there's a chance that you have an opportunity to draft whichever quarterback you want. And I think depending on how obviously these coaches feel about that, then it could lend itself to, you know, maybe a little more attractive. And like you said, Steichen, he's worked really well with Jalen Hurts. He was there for Justin Herbert's rookie year, when Herbert, you know, surpassed a lot of rookie records. And yeah, I think if you're going to bring in a young quarterback, I think he would be a very wise option. But, you know, as we close out here, Mike, we've mentioned already that the schedule moving forward, what is your prediction as far as wins? I'm not going to tell you to list off which teams, but what are you thinking of as far as like their final win-loss record?
I could see them going 5-12 or 6-11. I'm not someone who is like particularly optimistic, but I'm also not like, this team's tanking. And what I think what's been frustrating is a lot of the national messaging, completely ignoring the local messaging, which has been, at least since I've been here, they were not going to have a fire sale. They didn't have a fire sale. And, you know, I think that the team appreciates that. I do think there were some guys who were frustrated by the McCaffrey trade, but I think they're much better off now. And I actually think you'll see some guys step up during the second half of the season, especially with that late bye.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll just keep it real. I mean, the offense has been arguably the best I've seen since, you know, Cam Newton had that stretch in 2018 when he was working with Norvin Scott Turner. So, yeah, I mean, if this offense can continue to produce, I think fans are they're going to be happy regardless. Obviously, I think most fans, especially on Twitter, are kind of realistic about where they're going in the future. But, yeah, I mean, this city kind of is longing for a winner. 2015, you know, the vibes were excellent. We're still quite a ways away from that. But I think there is a decent core in place where if they can just really figure out whichever quarterback they draft and a competent enough NFL head coach, that they'll be hosting playoff games. And again, so we'll see. Mike, is there anything you want to plug before we head off?
Yeah, sure. I'm starting a weekly mailbag for the Charlotte Observer. It'll be free to readers. The first edition came out today on Thursday. I've got an exclusive Q&A coming out tomorrow, Friday, with PJ Walker. Just a few questions asking him about his personal life, his mom, and then his outlook on learning from other quarterbacks who are contemporaries of his.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely check that out. Follow Mike on Twitter, Mike_E_KKAYE. Mike, thanks again for joining. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. I really appreciate you having me on. And I've said this, I've probably said this to you privately, and I've definitely said it to other beat writers. What I enjoy about your perspective is you come at things from a realistic point of view. You don't get too high. You don't get too low. You're kind of the Jalen Hurts of Panthers fans. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, myself and John, we always like to keep it in perspective. John likes to get a little excited talking playoffs after beating the Bucks. I'm just like, hey, let's try to take it easy. Let's see where things go. It's just a week-to-week league. And someone like yourself, too, and I told John this last week, is like the NFL like analysis can be so reactionary just because, I mean, there's only 17 games. But every week there's like a different take and nuance. I mean, you know, this week it's, you know, Justin Fields is the best quarterback from the 2021 class, which very well might be true. But, you know, a few weeks ago, it was Trevor Lawrence. And then last year, it was all Mac Jones. So to me, it's just like, let's let games play out. Let's let the week play out. Let's let everything just come to fruition. Because, you know, the NFL, while it's not like the NBA or NHL, it's still small data. But you just have to take it kind of week by week. I know it's a very coach cliche thing to say, but, you know, that's kind of what keeps me sane.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's like a stat where, and I'm terrible with math, but it's like every 8 games of baseball is 1 game of the NFL. And so obviously, you know, you only have so many pizza slices available. And I think some people eat a little too fast.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you. Well, that's going to be it for this evening. Thanks again for Mike for joining, and really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.